There's been a small town movement happening in Pennsylvania over protections for LGBTQ people.
When I heard you could be fired in Pennsylvania or discriminated against for being LGBT, I was very upset by that. And I went to my township board of commissioners in Lower Merion Township and worked with them for 2 years to pass an ordinance.
And even beyond the Philly suburbs, other places are passing their own ordinances. Huntingdon recently became the first rural town in Pennsylvania to outlaw discrimination against LGBTQ people in employment, housing, and public spaces. But the state has yet to pass its own law. So why is Pennsylvania the only state in the Northeast that doesn't have one of these anti-discrimination laws on the books? I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. Keystone Crossroads' Laura Benshoff reported on this story. Laura, this story starts with a man named Anthony Bullitt. Tell me about him.
Anthony says this all started when he went to a ceremony at Riverview Cemetery in Huntingdon where they were going to rededicate the graves of some Civil War soldiers. It was kind of like an integration ceremony for this historic cemetery, and he said it just made him feel kind of weird.
They were just remarking how incredible, you know, how nice it was that we didn't have a segregated cemetery.
Why did he say he felt weird?
You need to know a little bit about Anthony. Anthony is in his 50s, and he grew up in Huntingdon.
My grandfather moved here in the early 1900s and had a house built for him, and I grew up in sort of the old family home where my father grew up.
Huntingdon is about 3.5 hours west of Philadelphia. It's kind of smack dab in the middle between Pittsburgh and Harrisburg. Only about 7,000 people live there, and it's the biggest, you know, borough in that county. It's the county seat. And it's a small college town. Juniata College is located there. But he was gone for a long time, and he moved back to come take care of his mom. And as a Black man and as a gay man, you know, he saw this kind of kumbaya ceremony as a little bit too self-congratulatory.
It was almost as if they were trying to portray Huntingdon as being this greatly integrated town. Now, granted, we're not the South, where we didn't have separate things, separate facilities for whites and blacks. And so we've always, if you will, been integrated in the larger sense. But there still was always a difference between how blacks, the jobs, for example, the jobs blacks could get and the jobs whites could get. So, I mean, whatever perceived equality there was in death, there was not that equality in life. And that's just how it is nowadays for those who are LGBTQ.
So he wrote a letter to the editor at the local paper and basically said, this is great and everything, but why isn't Huntingdon looking at doing things that would make this place more welcoming for LGBTQ residents? And one of the things that Huntingdon could be doing would be passing a local ordinance that would prohibit discrimination in jobs, employment.
Why does Anthony think there needs to be a local ordinance protecting LGBTQ people?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, his own lived experience, he says he didn't feel discriminated against, but he also knew a lot of people who wanted to leave.
This is where I live, but if I wanted to have fun, that, you know, going elsewhere, either State College, Philadelphia, New York.
A lot of young people, I mentioned Juniata College, would go to college there, but then would feel like this isn't a place I can have a future. So, you know, he took it upon himself. I think he was feeling galvanized both by that cemetery rededication and also by what was happening. I mean, this was around 2010. This was pre-marriage equality, but there were a lot of conversations happening kind of around civil rights for LGBTQ people. And he sort of saw this as this was his ground to cover.
So at that point, it was just, well, I followed that by letters to each of the council members. There's 7 council members.
He started going to their meetings.
Over the next probably few years, just periodically write another letter to the editor, to the paper saying, you know, nothing's happened.
And he pretty much just spent a few years beating the drum, sounding the alarm, saying this is something we should be doing, and kind of not really getting anywhere.
So this was sort of like just a grassroots movement of one.
I mean, it was for a while. And eventually he met someone named Jason Landau Goodman.
And I am the executive director of the Pennsylvania Youth Congress,
which is this group that works on LGBTQ issues for young people in Pennsylvania. And Jason has a pretty similar story. He got his own anti-discrimination ordinance passed in Lower Marion when he was just a teenager.
I was 19 years old, coming into myself. I was a student at the University of Pennsylvania. And when I heard you could be fired in Pennsylvania or discriminated against for being LGBT, I was very upset by that. And I went to my township board of commissioners in Lower Marion Township, right outside the city, and worked with them for 2 years to pass an ordinance.
And at the time, it was pretty novel for suburbs like Lower Marion, even as close to Philly as that is, to try to take on this as part of their mission, right? What is the role of a local government in protecting its residents from discrimination?
We were the first ordinance passed by a township in the state, one of the first suburbs. Generally, those ordinances up till that time had been passed in Philadelphia, Lancaster, Pittsburgh, the bigger cities. But we were at the front of the wave of getting these ordinances done in suburban communities. And so that was very exciting. We worked for several years to pass them.
And his work has just kind of continued that model as more and more places showed an interest in passing local ordinances. Pennsylvania Youth Congress and Jason just kept meeting with people and giving them kind of a toolkit for how they could get these local ordinances passed in their hometowns themselves. And now PA has 58 of them across the state.
So Jason and Anthony get together, and what happens then?
Well, the time things started to finally move. You know, there were some shakeups on the borough council, more Democrats got elected, and some of those folks were willing to champion this as something they wanted to do. And Anthony also found more local people willing to work on the issue with him.
We had people from their teens to their 80s.
Some students at Juniata College, some parents of LGBTQ youth who said, hey, I don't want my kid to feel like they're not welcome here.
We gathered almost 150 letters of support from throughout the community. And then in October 2018 is when we presented everything to the borough council.
It's a 7-member council, and they needed 4. And so they were trying to figure out, can we get to those 4 votes?
So were they able to?
Well, there was some pushback. For example, one of the council members, David Corey, who I spoke to, says he has a gay son, but he couldn't vote for this ordinance because he just felt that it would be a slippery slope.
If another outfit, like, we'll say, a group of skinheads or somebody like that comes into the borough and wants recognized, we're going to have a hard time saying, no, we can't recognize you because we'd be discriminating against you.
It's an argument that you hear a lot as pushback for civil rights for LGBTQ people. But in the end, they got the 4 votes and the ordinance passed in December.
When we come back,
we've seen these bills introduced in Harrisburg year after year, starting in the mid-70s. It just hasn't moved out of committee.
This is The Why.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Annette John Hall. I'm talking to Keystone Crossroads reporter Laura Benshoff about how a small town in rural Pennsylvania was able to pass LGBTQ protections through persistent grassroots efforts. Laura, in the state, there have been almost 60 ordinances that have been passed. It's important, clearly, for these towns. What's the big picture significance of all this?
Well, Jason Landau Goodman says it's symbolic.
The win in Huntington is like a beacon of light that goes out to so many of these rural communities considering passing these ordinances.
You know, I think there can be stereotypes of kind of an urban versus rural divide on certain social issues, including gay rights. And also at the statewide level, it's intended to send a signal to lawmakers that, you know, you might think that your jurisdiction, that the area you cover, isn't interested in this, but if local ordinances like this start popping up, then maybe they'll think, okay, if this came to a vote, I would vote for it because clearly there's some interest in my district.
We're working directly right now with communities in Gettysburg and Shippensburg and others to pass these ordinances. And so they're very inspired by the leadership in Huntington.
This is what's so interesting to me about this story, Laura, is that local towns are taking the lead on this. And meanwhile, there's been no movement at all on the state level.
That's right. We've seen these bills introduced in Harrisburg year after year, starting in the mid-70s, that would basically put the language prohibiting discrimination against LGBTQ people into a state law, into the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act. But it just hasn't moved out of committee. It'll get introduced and stall year after year.
Katie.
Hey, Katie. It's Laura from WHO.
I called up my colleague, Katie Meyer, who works in Harrisburg, and she kind of gave me the lowdown, at least on the recent history of these bills. One of the main reasons that they never passed out of a very important committee was that the chair of that committee in recent years has been a guy named Daryl Metcalf.
And he's very conservative. He's been sort of an outspoken social conservative, and he made it very clear that he was never going to pass that bill out of his committee.
Now, he recently moved on. There's a new person chairing the state government committee, and that person would not talk to me for an interview. But according to Katie, he's open to it. But this is an election year, and this committee works on a lot of state government and election-related bills, so it might just not be the priority. You know, 2020 is huge. Pennsylvania is a key state. So this bill could wait for another year, basically, and that might just be what happens.
Democrats, largely House Democrats, but in the Senate as well, have been the ones pushing for this by and large. And things generally only get on the agenda if they can get some Republican support for them. And thus far, Republicans have said, well, you know, this isn't like an enormous priority.
Anthony has worked on this for 10 years, and it finally got passed. He must be feeling pretty good right about now, huh?
He says he feels really proud.
I just feel more proud. I think that's the biggest thing. And I'm happy this was done because I'm happy with the conversation that was started. You know, I never wanted to be so out there, if you so to speak, but it's nice that I can be myself and not have to be afraid.
And he made this really nice connection between his parents' generation and the work that he's been doing on this. You know, he said his mom remembers when the Civil Rights Act passed.
And she said that she could feel a noticeable difference in the town, that somehow people just started treating the African-American population a little differently. Maybe it was just her, but that's how she felt. And again, that's how I hope people or some people will feel now, that they feel that, you know, this town is, you know, maybe a little bit friendlier to them than they thought.
The other thing that is pretty amazing to me is usually we hear about people organizing as a reaction to some sort of discrimination they faced. But in this situation, it seems like Anthony had another motivation, a motivation to try to build community, to try to keep people in Huntington. It seemed like that was just as much of his motivation as anything else.
Yeah, and he said that explicitly. You know, he has friends considering buying homes, but, you know, they were waiting for this kind of welcome sign to go on in Huntington for them to be able to stay and think about putting down roots.
I mean, it's not the be-all, end-all. It's not like, oh, everybody's going to flock to Huntington now. But I do think it's something that people look for.
It's almost like PR or advertising. It's a kind of signaling of values. And in places that have been losing people, you know, that was his kind of business pitch for this, is like, hey, Huntington has had some hard times economically. Why would we not do something that would send the sign that more people are welcome here?
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you, Annette.
That was Keystone Crossroads reporter Laura Benshoff. The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Benyako, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, under the editorial direction of Katie Culinary. Our intern is Kelly Brennan. And coming up tomorrow, we'll bring you a story about a mysterious illness, a science teacher's theory, and how she lives with uncertainty.
And the reality of the disease hit me that I will never be the same, and I've changed. And I remember I looked out the window and I saw a leaf fall, and a sense of joy came in me. God said, "See, leaves change too."
Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.